Hello, everybody. Bob Main here with another episode of today's Survival Show. Episode number 174, to be exact. This is a practical show, mainly because I'm an everyday guy. I'm not a survival and preparedness author or speaker or anything like that. I'm just a dude that's going through life trying to stay prepared for everyday tragedies, basically. And, you know, there are tragedies every day. Sometimes they're small, sometimes they're large, sometimes they're medium. I mean, hey, losing a job these days is a tragedy, is it not? Losing a family member, if someone dies in your family, that's a tragedy. As I'm dictating this podcast last night, some really bad thunderstorms and wind and rain ripped through the San Antonio, Texas area where I live and knocked out power for 12,000 to 15,000 people. That is a tragedy, or it's a disaster of some sort, no matter how you measure it. And kind of reminds me of the days when I was growing up in Wisconsin. I did most of my growing up in Wisconsin when the blizzards would come through, and this is the time of the year for blizzards in Wisconsin. So all kinds of things can happen. Are you ready for that kind of stuff? That's what I like to talk about on this show. Now, this week, I have a little bit different style of podcast than what I've typically done. As you know, I don't like to go tinfoil hat on you. I try to keep this show rooted in common sense. I'm not into all those tinfoil hat type theories. This show, I am going to talk about some cold, hard facts. Some cold, hard facts about the state of our society and of the world that we live in. It is very important that you know what's going on. Lack of education is a huge issue these days, folks, and I mean lack of education of what's going on in the world. Why is this a survival topic? Well, this is a survival topic because I believe that if you don't know where we're at right now, you're not going to really know how to prepare. And, you know, knowledge is power. The more you can learn, the more you can stay educated, the better off you're going to be able to prepare. That's just kind of my personal belief. So there's an article I found in the Survival Spot blog, a good blog called Survival Spot, and it's on Blogspot, I believe. I will put a link to all of this, all of these things that I'm talking about in the forum. Join our forum. If you're not a member of Today's Survival Show forum, go there. Go to todayssurvival.com. Click the forum button. Become a member of our forum. Please do me a favor. If you join our forum, and I hope you do, please send me an email and tell me that you joined and give me the username or the email that you used to sign up. It's the best way I can think of to limit all the ridiculous spammers. I know that it makes it a little bit more difficult to join our forum, but I'd rather have a smaller number of people that are real people that want to converse and talk about preparedness ideas rather than a bunch of jokers on there that have nothing to contribute. So send me an email and say, hey, Bob, I just registered. Here's my username. Please approve my account, and I'll get you approved right away. My email address is bob@todayssurvival.com. Two S's in that, by the way. Bob@todayssurvival.com. Also, consider an investment in my Survival Champions Club podcast. It's a special premium podcast put together. It's information I've never covered on Today's Survival Show before. It's excellent info. It's only $15, a couple of hours worth of interviews and survival topics that you can't find on any of my other episodes prior to this one, and it'll help support my show. This is a listener-supported podcast, folks. I do not have sponsors for a reason. I don't want you to hear a bunch of commercials. I want you to get some good information. So with that said, let's jump right into the 100 facts that you need to know about what's going on in the world today that's probably going to wake you up. I bet a lot of this stuff you didn't know. Now, I don't have time to cover all 100. So in case you were scared that this was going to go on for a long time, that this podcast was going to last forever, I'm going to pick out some of the ones that I think are extremely important, but I want you to go to this article at Survival Spot blog. Again, go to the forum and check the link and read them all. First one I want to cover, and by the way, this is in no particular order. The first one I want to talk about is a staggering 48.5% of all Americans live in a household that receive some form of government benefits. 48.5%, nearly half of all Americans live in a house that receives some kind of a government benefit. In 1983, that was below 30%. So we've increased by 20% the number of people dependent on government. I want you to think about that for a minute. And again, this is not a political show. I don't like to inject politics into today's survival show. These are just facts. What I'm saying is not pointed at a particular party. It's not pointed at a particular political philosophy. These are just facts. Facts that you need to know. When you've got half the people that are dependent on some type of a government benefit, what's going to happen when those government benefits get shut off? And some or all of those benefits are going to get shut off at some point. And you'll see how that's going to bring... It's going to mean more as I continue here talking about some of these. But just think about that one for a minute. Now, this next point is very important for you to know. And again, please... please believe me when I say this is not pointed at a certain person or political party. It's just the facts, folks. But since President Obama was sworn in, the share of national debt per household has increased by $35,000. In other words, what every person, what every household owes to pay off the national debt went up 35 grand. I think it's something like $240,000 or something like that per household. Okay, just in the last 3 years, it's gone up $35,000. Okay, the U.S. national debt has been increasing by an average of more than $4 billion a day. It's $4 billion a day since the Obama administration took office. And again, folks, just the facts. $4 billion a day! Holy cow! And this one's going to scare you. It is projected that the U.S. national debt will hit 344% of gross domestic product by the year 2050 if we don't change something. This is 2012. In 38 years, it's going to be over three times our GDP, our gross domestic product. Whoa! How can we sustain that? We simply can't. Now, let me put some of this in perspective for you. $4 billion a day increase in our debt. How much is a billion? Well, a lot of people don't really understand how much $1 billion represents. So let me make it a little easier for you to understand. 1 billion seconds ago, it was 1981. I'll say that again. A billion seconds ago, the year was 1981. Now think about that. If a billion seconds ago, it was 1981, and we're increasing the debt $4 billion a day. Wow. Wrap your brain around that. And you know, when you hear all these trillions of dollars being thrown around, you hear these politicians talking about, well, we're going to reduce the debt by a trillion or reduce the deficit by a trillion. And they tell you that we're like $15 trillion in debt. Well, let me put that into perspective for you. Remember I just said that a billion seconds ago it was 1981? A trillion seconds ago it was 29,000 BC. I'm not kidding, folks. 1 trillion seconds ago it was 29,000 BC. Do the math. Get a calculator out and figure it out for yourself. There's 86,400 seconds in a day, ladies and gentlemen. So take a trillion and divide it by 86,400 and you'll see how many days that was. And then divide that by 365 and you'll see how many years ago that represents. My God, think about that. A trillion seconds ago, it was 29,000 BC. That was the year. And we're $15 trillion in debt? I mean, that, folks, that's a major, major tragedy. How are we ever going to pay that off? The reality is, I don't think we're going to. And I'm not trying to make a political statement here. I'm telling you the facts. I want you to get prepared for this, folks. I want you to get ready. This is why we prepare. Because this country, now I know I have international listeners who listen to this show. I don't know what it's like in your country. I'm talking about what's happening here in the good old US of A. Whew, but man, we are in trouble. Let's keep going here. Let's keep going and talk about some of these 100 reasons why we're in some serious trouble. According to a recent survey, one out of every three Americans would not be able to make a mortgage or a rent payment next month if they suddenly lost their job. One third of Americans could not make their rent or mortgage payment next month if they lost their job. And that's what's happened a lot in the last, I would say, 4 years, 3.5 to 4 years. People are not putting away money. This is personal responsibility, ladies and gentlemen. This is personal responsibility. My family, my wife and I, we have over a year's worth of expenses put away. Over a year put away. God forbid I should lose my job. I'm very, very thankful. I feel blessed to have my position right now. I'm not doing as well as I'd like. I'm not making the kind of money I would like. But I live by a simple philosophy. I spend less than I make. You know, that is so easy yet so hard for so many people. I spend less than I make. And by spending less than I make, I've been able to, I haven't done it overnight. It's taken us probably, we started in 2005. It's taken us 7 years to get to this point. But a third of the people can't make next month's rent or mortgage payment if they lose their job? Why? This is lack of preparation, lack of personal responsibility, ladies and gentlemen. Plain and simple. Now, since I'm talking about this subject, here's another one. According to a new study conducted by the BlackRock Investment Institute, I'll put a link to them as well, the ratio of household debt to income, you know when you go to get a mortgage, they look at your debt to income ratio? And by the way, you should always look at your debt to income ratio. In other words, how much debt do you have compared to your total income? You figure it out on a yearly basis. Just take how much you owe people every year. How much is your debt every year? And how much do you make? And what's that ratio? The ratio of household debt to personal income in the United States is now, you ready for this? 154%. Whoa. For every $100 that somebody makes, they owe $154. Wow. 154% income to debt ratio. And people want to know why they're experiencing tough times right now? Unbelievable. Now, this next one I didn't believe when I read this one, but and I researched it myself and I found out it's true. Believe it or not, one out of every seven Americans has at least 10 credit cards. I'll say that again. I should quit chuckling. This is no laughing matter. I don't know what got me chuckling there. That's bad. Sorry about that. One out of every seven Americans has at least 10 credit cards. Why? What do you need 10 credit cards for? I only have one credit card, and it's because I have to. The company I work for, it's a mandatory term of my employment that I have to have a credit card to put all my business expenses on. And I have to turn in all my receipts for all my business expenses. And if they request it, I have to turn in my credit card statement with those business expenses on it so that they can see, I guess, for auditing purposes or tax purposes or whatever it is. So that's company policy. Otherwise, I would not have this. And I use an American Express. I use a gold American Express. And the reason I use American Express is because the type of Amex that I have does not allow me to run up a balance. American Express has to be paid off every 30 days. Well, they usually give me a little bit more than 30 days, but not much. It's got to be paid off. If I don't pay it off, they cut me off. And I'm perfectly fine with that. I think that's the way all charge card. That's actually a charge card. It's actually not a credit card. It's a charge card. I think that's what everybody should have. I'm not trying to tell you to live how to live your life, but this is one of the danger signs that we're really in trouble here, folks. When people have 10 credit cards, I have only 4 pieces of plastic in my wallet. One of them is the American Express I just told you about. The other one is my driver's license. The other one is my Visa debit card directly linked to my checking account. And the fourth is my concealed handgun license. That's it. That's all I carry in my wallet. That's all I need. What do I need more than that? If I can't afford it, I don't buy it. That's just the way it is. If I can't afford to pay cash for it within 30 days, that's my rule. If we can't afford to pay cash within 30 days, we just simply do not buy it. And I can tell you, I sleep a lot more comfortably at night. It's all about personal discipline, folks. It's all about personal responsibility. But 1 in 7 people have 10 credit cards? What? 4. Okay, here's another one. In the United States today, approximately 2/3 of all college graduates have student loans to pay back when they get out of school. 2/3. 2 out of every 3 students have college loans, student loans to pay back when they get out of college. Now, I'm going to say something here that might be controversial. And I'm in my car, I'm driving, I'm out on the open freeway here. So, you know, I've got some time to think. Nobody's in the car with me here. I'm just talking to you who's listening to this. So here goes. And again, I may get some hate mail for this. I might get really taken to task on this kind of stuff. I don't know. We'll have to see what happens. But college degrees, I think, are way, way, way too expensive for what you get. First of all, I don't understand why it takes 4 years to get your college degree. And in most cases, 4.5 to 5, maybe even 5 years, or 5.5 years. Okay, it took me 5.5 years to get through. But that's because I changed my major a couple times and I wasted some time and I goofed off and partied too much. But why? Why? You know what? I'm not convinced that you have to go 8, 9, or 10 semesters to get your degree to learn what you need to learn. Why can't it be done in 5 or 6 or 8 or, you know, 7 semesters? I think that the way that the colleges are set up right now, here in the United States at least, these are money-making institutions, ladies and gentlemen. This is about the money. Okay, college tuition has gone up drastically in the last 15 or 20 years. It's insane. Why? Why? Well, I think it's because the educational institutions of higher education, they just want to make the money. It's about money, folks. It's a money-making business. It's a factory. It's a money-making factory. I think a lot of the stuff that you take in college, you don't need. You don't need, but you're just there because they want to make the money. I got my college degree in 1984. It tells you how old. Well, I'll just tell you how old I am. I turned 50 last November. I graduated from college in December of 1984. I'm not using a lot of the stuff that I learned. I got my degree in business. I got a minor in music and a bachelor's degree in business administration from a state school in Wisconsin. And I'm probably not using nearly half of what I learned in college. You know what a college degree has done for me? A college degree has opened some doors to a job that I could not have opened without it. It has not helped me perform my job any better. Okay, I've been in sales now for 27 years, sales and marketing. I've been, you know, fairly successful. There's more I could do, but I've been doing all right for myself. And what I learned in college with my business degree really hasn't helped me perform my job any better. All it's done is it's opened some doors. And even that's a little questionable. Of all the positions that I've held in the last 27 years, only two. And I've held, let's see, I think it's seven different positions in 27 years. Only two out of the seven cared whether I had a degree or not. Only two out of the seven made it a requirement that I have a degree to hold the position. And only one, the current position I have right now, only one made me prove that I had a college degree. To get this current job I have right now, I had to give them a copy of my college diploma. So, I think it's overrated, and I know you're going to get angry with me, folks, but, you know, why do you need to be there 5 years? Why do you need to be there 4.5 years? If someone's sharp, they apply themselves, if they're studious, if they really do what's asked of them, you know, they should be able to get out of there in 2.5-3 years, cut the cost down. Let's trim some of the fat in higher education. Let's trim some of the expenses and maybe start by reducing the amount of courses and credit hours that someone needs to take. Once they decide what kind of a degree that they want to get, they should begin that right away, get a few basics out of the way. I spent nearly the first 2 years getting basics out of the way. Four semesters, come on, shouldn't be that. Two semesters at the most to get all the basics out of the way. A lot of the stuff that I took in my second year and part of my third year, I just didn't need, folks. I just didn't need. So, you know, let me finish up with this point about debt. Since I'm talking about education and debt, here's another fact. This is an absolute fact, ladies and gentlemen. The total amount of student loan debt now exceeds the amount of credit card debt in the United States. So earlier I was talking about people that have 10 credit cards and the amount of debt that people are in. Student loan debt far exceeds credit card debt in the United States. Does that tell you that the cost of education is way too expensive? Now, there's a lot of people that have different thoughts about how to fix the cost of education. And that's a whole separate argument. The problem is, it costs too much. And too many people are going into debt. So now they've got these. Now, why is this a survival topic? Folks, when people are in debt, when people are not financially responsible, they become a drag on society. They become dependent on society. They become those people eventually that are on government assistance. Many of them do. They rely on the government to help because they can't be personally responsible. Well, it's because they choose not to be personally responsible, in my opinion. So we, the taxpayers and the government, have to support them. What does that cause? Causes our government to go broke. What does that cause? It causes a loss of services. What does that cause? Rioting in the streets. And so on and so forth. It just continues to snowball, folks. It's a snowball effect. Now, here's something that will shock you that I didn't realize. Here's another one of the reasons why we are in serious trouble, folks. The United States has had a negative trade balance every year since 1976. So again, I mentioned earlier, this is not just pointed at one president or one political party or anything like that, because since 1976 in the United States, we've had both parties in control of this country. And we've had a negative trade balance every year since 1976. And since that time, the U.S. has run a total trade deficit of more than $7.5 trillion. Remember I told you how much a trillion is? A trillion seconds ago, it was 29,000 BC. Our trade deficit is $7.5 trillion. And since I'm on the subject of trade deficit, a lot of that is with China. And the United States trade deficit with China right now is 27 times more than it was back in 1990. 22 years ago, the trade balance was 27 times less. Now, here's another one I want to cover with you. A lot of people talk about the population explosion in the world, not just the United States, and how it's contributing to creating a disaster that's about to happen. And I really believe this is true. You got to think about this. Here's another fact. There are fewer payroll jobs in the United States. In other words, there's fewer paying jobs. That's no secret. Everybody knows that. Here's the problem. I mean, since 2000 is what I'm talking about. Since the year 2000, 12 years ago, there are just simply fewer jobs available. Problem is, our population has grown 30 million since 2000 in the United States. So this, we got 30 more million people than we had, and we have fewer jobs since the year 2000. Now, think about that. Here's another one that my wife and I were talking about last night. In fact, I don't even remember how we got on the subject. I've been up all night, folks. I didn't get much sleep. I got 2 or 3 hours worth of sleep last night because of the storms that we had come through the South Texas area. Woke me up 3 or 4 different times. We had thunder that sounded like somebody was dropping grenades outside of our house. I mean, it was bad. I mean, that's the worst thunder I've heard in many, many years. It woke me up and two times, and then the wind and the rain woke me up. So I'm doing the best I can here on a limited amount of sleep, and I can't remember why my wife and I got on this subject, but we did. We were talking about this last night, actually, before we went to bed. Today, there are 6 million Americans between the age of 25 and 34 that are living with their parents. 6 million Americans between the ages of 25 and 34, living with mom or dad or both. Well, that's putting a strain on parents that parents didn't used to have. That's putting an economic strain when they're having to still support someone who's between 25 and 34 years old. Used to be that, you know, when they're 18, 19, 20 years old, they go off and they support themselves. And we had a whole lot more people doing that 25, 30, 35 years ago. I mean, that's the way I was raised. I was warned. I was warned when I was, you know, 13, 14. You know, they said, Bob, we love you. My parents said, Bob, we love you. We love you dearly. And we're always there to help you. You know that. But we fully expect that once you get out of high school, you begin the process of supporting yourself. And once you're out of college, you're on your own. And that's exactly what I did. I went in, you know, those were my expectations. And that was my parents' expectations of me. And right now, we got a bunch of people in that age group living with their parents. Why? Well, to their defense, there's not nearly the jobs available. And this is one of the reasons why job creation is got to be, folks, from a survival standpoint, if this country is to survive, and if we as citizens are to survive, job creation has got to be number one. So there's just simply not jobs. But I also think there's a lack of initiative. First of all, let's go back to the education system here. And folks, I don't want you to think that I'm really, really anti-education. I'm not. But we have some flaws. I think a lot of younger people go and they get a college degree that's not going to help them. And it's because it's something that they enjoy. And they've always been told, do something you like. Well, you know what? Something you like might not necessarily help you get employed right away. Sometimes we have to do things that we don't like in order to get to a point where we can do something that we absolutely love to do. But sometimes I think young people need to go and they need to study and get some kind of a skill. And if it's not a college degree, if it's a trade school or whatever, get some kind of a skill that helps them become employed much more quickly. And maybe it's not their first love that they've ever wanted to do. Maybe it's the second or third thing that they like the most, but at that time, it's the most practical. You know what I mean? So getting a degree in art history might not be the most practical thing right now. Because with an art history degree, you might not be able to go out and find as many jobs as you can with some other kind of a degree that's a lot more useful these days. So you know, who knows exactly what the reasons are or combination, but the problem is 6 million people between the ages of 25 and 34 are still living with parents. That can't be, folks. We can't sustain that. That's going to cause an even greater problem in the United States and a greater dependency problem, which, again, the more dependency, I'm a firm believer in this. I've never spoken much about this in the previous episodes I've done on this show, but I'm going to speak about it a lot now. The growing dependency is probably the single biggest survival problem that we have, not just in the United States, but in the world today. Now, since I'm talking about these 6 million people between 25 and 34 living with mom and dad, guess what? Who do you think these people are? Now, I said, obviously you know they're between 25 and 34. I just said that several times. This may shock you. If you think about, okay, well, who are these young people? Are they men? Are they women? Who are they? Men are twice as likely to live with their parents as women are. That one blew me away. I couldn't believe that. Men are twice as likely to live with their parents as women are. Come on, guys. Come on, dudes. Get with it, man. Get with it. Now, here's something that I really wish a politician would address. And it doesn't matter what party they're from. And since we're in a big election season right now, you know, all these politicians are spewing off at the mouth about all the great things they're going to do. And last night, you know, as I dictate this podcast, it's Wednesday. It's Wednesday the 25th, I believe, 25th of January. So last night, Obama gave his State of the Union address. And he didn't speak much of this, and I haven't heard very many politicians talk too much about what I'm going to say next. And here's a problem that really needs to be fixed. According to Paul Osterman, professor of economics at MIT, 20% of all Americans who are employed are making $10.65 an hour or less. 20% of the people who do have a job are making less than $10.65 an hour. Low-paying jobs. People are not making the kind of money that they used to make. Why is that? Well, there's tons of theories as to why that is. A lot of companies just simply can't afford to pay more. A lot of small businesses, their profits are just not that high. You know, when you read about record profits in American business today, most of those are major big corporations. It's not the small businesses that have record profits. They're not enjoying that. They're enjoying a severe reduction in profits. So what do? When they make less money, they can't pay as much. And they have to keep raising their prices of the goods and services sold because they're saddled with too many burdens. Small businesses have way, way, way too many expenses to pay. And one of the things that they do is they cut employee wages. Now, that might not be the right thing to do. You might be saying, well, it shouldn't do that. People are their greatest asset. I believe that. I believe that people are the greatest asset any company has. And they should not mistreat their people. Almost all successful companies treat their people well, pay them well, treat them well. And that's why they're successful. And companies who take advantage of their employees and pay them less and keep slashing, they get what they pay for. When you underpay employees, you typically get underperforming employees. That's just human nature, folks. And you know what? I used to be a manager. I was a manager for over 6 years. I was a high-level manager in a major, major corporation. Big, couple billion-dollar company. I was a high-level manager for over 6 years. I did everything within my power, and I had a lot of power to do so, to increase the wages of the people that were working for me. I had 168 people under me at one point. I had 12 direct reports, a total of 168 people. The vast majority of them made more money while I was their boss. And guess what? I got more performance out of them. And I had the right to expect more performance. I had the right to counsel an employee and say, look, you know, I'm paying you at the high end of the pay rate for your position. So here's what we expect. And I had the right to hold them to a greater, a higher standard and greater expectations because I was paying them an above average wage for what they were doing. Managers, are you listening to me? It's simple facts, folks. If you're going to cut expenses in your business, don't cut your employees' expenses. Yet, we have so many people making less than $10.65 an hour. I meant to say, don't cut your employees' wages. If you're going to cut expenses, don't cut your employees' wages. Don't make employee wages one of those things that you cut. And unfortunately, you know what a lot of unsuccessful companies do? That's the first thing they cut. They cut employee pay. And notice I said unsuccessful companies. If you're a business owner listening to this and your profits are hurting, don't look to cut employee pay first. Look to cut other ways. I know. I've made this work. I was held to a strict profit and loss standard. When I was a manager, when I was an upper-level manager, I managed my P&Ls. And I had to turn a certain percent of a profit every year, or I didn't keep my job. And I met my profit and loss goals. I met my requirements, and I increased employee earnings. I was able to cut in a lot of other areas, but that was one thing off limits. That was taboo. I couldn't touch that. That was a self-imposed rule of mine. I'll do whatever I have to do. I am not touching employee earnings. Well-paid, happy people typically produce more. Unfortunately, American businesses have it backwards. They just don't get it. And that's a problem. And with so many people, 20%, making less than $10.65 an hour, who can live on that? Another reason why we have a lot of dependency, in my opinion. Okay, another reason we're in serious trouble. You know, you've heard about declining home values. Like in the last, 6 or 7 years. Well, think about this. Since the housing crisis began, home values in the United States have dropped $6 trillion. Trillion. Again, think about this now. A trillion seconds ago, it was 29,000 BC. Home values have dropped $6 trillion since the crisis began. Staggering. Does this motivate you to want to go out and buy a house right now? You know, you hear all these things about, oh, it's a good time to buy. I'm a little afraid, okay? I feel like I got a pretty good price on my new house that I just recently purchased less than a year ago after moving. But when I read this, I'm thinking, well, how many more trillions are we going to lose? It could go farther. But all the people who purchased a home in 2004, 2005, 2006, part of 2007, collectively they've lost $6 trillion. And since I'm talking about home values, here's another one. Here's another reason why we're in serious trouble. According to the Mortgage Bankers Association, at least 8 million Americans are at least 1 month behind on their mortgage payments. 8 million. And this next one kind of ties into something I said earlier. 77% of all Americans are now living paycheck to paycheck. In 2007, it was only 43%. Now it's gone to 77% living paycheck to paycheck. Means if they lost their job, they can't make those mortgage payments next month. Now, probably one of the scariest facts that I recently read, and folks, if you really think about this, this is going to shock you, and it's going to scare the daylights out of you. This is going to make you start preparing. And again, I try not to go tinfoil hat. I mean, I'm trying to tell you folks, I'm not talking about tinfoil hat theories here. I am talking about reality. I'm not talking about what might happen. I'm talking about what is happening. Beginning January 1st, 2011, about a year ago, the baby boomers began to hit retirement age. And from now on, every single day, for about the next 19 years, you know what's going to happen? every day for 19 years. Every day, 10,000 baby boomers are going to hit the age of 65 for the next 19 years. Whoa. You are talking about a lot of people that are going to be exiting the workforce, and if they don't have the savings, guess what? They're going to be dependent. They're either going to be dependent on the government, or they might be living with their kids and be dependent on their adult children. 10,000 people a day for the next 19 years. Or they're going to continue to work. That's the other thing. Is probably for a lot of people, and I'm included in that, folks, I'm 50. So I'm going to be one of those people within the next 19 years turning 65. And I'm already planning, folks. I'll still be working at age 65. I'm already planning for that. I'm planning way ahead for that because I don't think that I'm financially going to be able to hang it up. Well, I don't know. You never know. If I continue my saving and investing rate and trying to find the most secure investments that I possibly can, and hedging my bets and spreading my money around into different things and taking advantage of the different market trends and, you know, the precious metal trends and things. And by the way, I got some more things towards the end of this program that might shock you. Some ways, that some things you might not know about money and investments. So I'm going to touch on that a little bit, even though I'm not an investment advisor. I'm one of those people that are going to be hitting 65 within the next 19 years. And folks, guess what? I'm either going to still be working or working part-time or whatever. But that's shocking when you think there's 10,000 of us a day for the next 19 years. Now, the more shocking statistic of what I just shared, here you go. In 1950, Social Security benefits for one person were paid for by 16 workers. Today, 1.75 workers are paying for each person receiving Social Security benefits. In 1950, you had 16 people contributing to that person's benefits. Today, 1.75. Who's going to pay for it? Nobody. There's the problem. And unfortunately, we have a lot of people hitting 65 to 70 years old right now that didn't do a good enough job of planning for their later years. And so they're becoming more and more dependent. And there are more of them becoming dependent. Wow. From 16 people contributing for every one that was taking out to 1.75. That's amazing. So, like, here's how you think about that. For every person retired getting Social Security now, me and one other person are paying for them. Think about that. Okay, here's some more that'll shock you a little bit, and then I'll move on to somewhat of a different subject here. 50 million Americans are now on Medicaid in 1965. Only 1 out of 50 were on Medicaid. So if you got 50 million people on Medicaid, it's about what? 1 out of every 6? Used to be 1 out of every 50. And more than 45 million Americans are now on food stamps. And the last thing that I want to share with you before I move into a different subject, it is being projected that about 50%, half of all U.S. children will be on food stamps at some point in their lives before they reach the age of 18. I'll say that again. It's being projected that about 50%, almost half of U.S. children, will be on food stamps at some point before they hit age 18, and it's no fault of their own. It's not their fault. That's the sad part. So you got to read this article, folks. You know, there's 100 of them. What did I just cover, 15 or 20? Read them all, And then ask yourself, do I need to become better prepared? Every single one of you who reads this article, and again, go to the forum. You don't have to be a member of our forum to find this, by the way, folks. Go to today's Survival Show forum and look for the section that says comments about the podcast. And I usually start a thread for every episode, and I'll do that for this one, episode 174. The reasons why we're in trouble. I'll start a thread, and I'll put a link, and you can read the article for yourself and look at all 100 reasons why we are in deep doo-doo, ladies and gentlemen, and you will be much, much more motivated to prepare if you're not already motivated. Now, I just need about 5 more minutes of your time. I'm going to shift gears and talk about another article from the same blog that I'll also link to. And the title of the article is very good. It says, "Are guns and ammo the new gold?" You know, everybody's investing in gold now because gold has skyrocketed and is projected to go up higher. Well, maybe the new gold would be guns and ammo. You know, I don't like this show here at today's Survival Show to be about all about guns and ammo. A lot of survivalists spend too much time on that. I do a whole nother podcast separate from this one. If you want to talk about guns, listen to my Handgun World show, which is on the Gun Rights Radio Network. It's called the Handgun World Show or the Handgun World Podcast, whatever you want to call it. And you can see that at handgunworld.com. You can listen to it. You can also download it from iTunes. Just search Handgun World on iTunes and you'll be able to find it. I talk about guns over there. Here I talk about prepping. But I've mentioned before that I stock primarily ammunition. And think about this. Here's some statistics. I'm going to go back to 1999. I'm going to go back about 13 years ago, think about this, and ask yourself, are guns and ammo the new gold? In 1999, a 20-round box of .223 ammo was around $12.49. And that's for the good stuff. I'm not talking about the cheap practice ammo. I'm not talking about the surplus FMJ. I'm talking about, you know, self-defense or varmint hunting rounds, something that you should load in your AR-15 or Mini 14 or whatever you're shooting your .223 ammo out of. Something you should load for self-defense. About $12.50. Today it's $26.99. It's doubled in price. It's doubled in price in 13 years. If we have a disaster, ammo is going to skyrocket to even higher prices. So will firearms. They'll become commodities, folks. And they're going to become items that are going to increase in value and become commodities. Commodities you could probably barter or trade or sell off if you don't need them. I don't know about you, but I stock boxes of ammunition even if I don't have a gun that shoots that caliber. Like, for example, I have no 40 caliber guns of any type right now, but I have 40 caliber ammunition. I don't have any 357 Magnum guns, but I have 357 Magnum and 38 Special ammo. Those are two very common calibers, and that ammunition, in my belief, could be worth money someday. If it's doubled in price in the last 13 years, it probably is going to double even some more. Double again, in the next 13 years. Might even go up higher. It's not going to decline in value. That's the thing. Firearms and ammunition, especially modern firearms and modern ammunition, probably are not going to decline much. They're always going to be worth something. And guess what? You'll always find someone to buy it from you. So, I don't sell any more firearms. I don't sell any more ammunition. I keep it. I keep it because I can always get something for it, and I can always get pretty close to what I paid, especially the ammunition. I can get pretty close to what I paid for it. And same with firearms. If they're a modern, popular firearm, okay, if they're a modern-day 1911, or even if they're a collectible 1911, or if it's a Glock or a Smith & Wesson M&P or an XD, Springfield XD, something like that, if it's something that's popular, guess what? You can always get something for it, and you can always, they always hold their value pretty well. And on my Handgun World show, several months ago, I did a show entitled, "Are Guns a Wise Investment?" And I laid out both ends. Some people think they are. Some people think they're not. I happen to think that ammunition is a decent investment. So think about that. You know, it's kind of like the new gold that's going to continue to go up in value. It's a way to hedge your bets on some of your money. You know, put some of your money, not all. I'm not saying go crazy. Don't go crazy buying a $3,000 rifle when you don't have any food stored. I'm not saying that. Because, I mean, food's like gold, too. I mean, food's, you know, worth a lot of money. Food prices are going up. If there's a bad disaster and we have food shortages, food's going to be at a high, high premium. But balance, in my opinion, balance what you store. I think balance is very important. It's important to strike that balance because, you know, you spread out the risk. And I think that firearms and ammunition, it's something you should consider. I mean, I'll never forget walking into a gun store about 6 months after President Obama was elected. I remember going into a gun store and seeing this huge picture of Obama, and underneath it, it said, Gun Salesman of the Year. And he was. President Obama was the Gun Salesman of the Year for an entire year after he was elected. People went out and just bought up gun. People who never thought of buying a gun before went out and bought a gun and ammunition because they felt it was going to be taken away. And trust me, folks, if Obama had his way, he would take most of our firearms and our firearms rights away from us. Make no mistake about it. I'm not getting political. I'm stating a fact. He even said when he was running, when he was campaigning, he even said that he would like to do that. So it became a commodity. Well, that could happen again. It might be something you might want to think about investing in. You know, once again, let me repeat, I'm not saying it should be your primary investment portfolio as a prepper, but it's something to consider. Don't ignore it, especially ammunition. The great thing about stocking ammunition is that, first of all, you can use it if you're stocking ammo for guns that you currently own. It becomes something that you can use. I've seen posts on the internet, well, you can't eat your ammo. Well, that's true. You can't eat your ammo, but you can sell it off or barter it if you need to. If you need money. And you know, you can buy one box at a time, one extra box more than you would normally buy. And I don't work for an ammunition manufacturer. I have no invested interest. I have no vested interest in telling you what I'm telling you. I'm just, because I care about you and I want you to prepare, this is why I'm saying this sort of thing. You can buy one box at a time, extra, more than you would normally buy. What does it cost? 15, 20, 25 bucks? 35 for some premium defensive pistol ammo? Keep it. Buy it. Invest in it. You can always sell it off. You can always throw it on GunBroker and sell it off if you have to. You can always go to your local gun show and sell it off if you have to. You can always call up a buddy and ask him if they want to buy it. You'll probably get a lot of takers on that. If times get really bad and there's some kind of a disaster and people have to defend themselves and they're short on ammo, that ammo is going to command a huge premium, folks. Trust me. So think about that, all right? Anyway, I hope you enjoyed this episode here about the 100 facts that tell you that we are in some serious, serious trouble, ladies and gentlemen, and it's time to prepare. And I hope that you didn't find it tinfoil hattish. I hope that you found it full of truths and facts and kind of a wake-up call as to why we need to prepare. So thanks again for tuning in to another episode of today's Survival Show. It's my goal to help you do what you can with what you have, wherever you are. Thank you, and I'll catch you next week. Goodbye.